Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I said this very confidently. I was like, given a few years to train, I would be a great keeper.
Wow.
She dribbled across top of the box and fired a shot, zinged past my head at 74 miles an hour. And I said, babe, okay, new rule. You don't kick it from anywhere inside 20 yards.
I'm obviously a very impatient person, but when I'm watching American football...
I don't get that. I don't feel that. Our agents in America, you basically have just a standard set fee. Over here, it's the Wild Wild West. I play dumb sometimes.
Right.
Like, I don't know how this works, but these refs are pretty bad.
But there's a certain quarterback you were really after.
Every single one.
Every single one.
I hate them all. My average is probably about 7,500 calories a day.
I feel like we should feed you.
It's like a League 2 striker. I mean, were you smoking weed? I'm not an investor that said, oh, I'm only going to be here from the Premier League. Like, I'm here for the fight. Who jumps? I mean, well, maybe you. You can't jump off the ship just because the team's not going to win.
Mm.
Like, I'm
not
here
turn for, up for a show.
Yeah,
Jamie,
like,
that's I sometimes think, why did we start this? Why did we start the overlap? What happened? The other week when we didn't release, when a guy came up to me in the streets and said, where's stick to football? I said, we had a week off, mate. He said, no, it's not right, that. It's ruined on my WhatsApp group. I'm like... That means we've got to do it forever.
Oh, is it starting now, is it? Oh.
JJ, can you understand their accent? Can you understand when they speak?
Yeah.
The Scousers, boats, what kind of boats on these Scousers?
My driver's a United fan, and he was like, I knew there was a rivalry between United and Liverpool. I didn't realize it was so...
Yeah. It's intense.
He would assume City and United's the biggest, and he's like, no, we hate Liverpool significantly more.
What's the sort of like state or town in the US where you almost need a passport to get in? It's almost like they're a bit strange and they're just like, you know, they'll like look after each other.
They're a bit strange,
It's like
got something about them.
I would say like a
Cleveland
or a Detroit.
You know what I mean? Them people who think they're better than what they are. You know, he's from Berry, but he's on LinkedIn now. He's on LinkedIn. He doesn't tweet no more. He's above Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn with all them
Are you on LinkedIn, JJ?
No.
You've killed me, JJ! I thought an intelligent man like you
massive long
would not exist in
account.
A cesspit.
Someone on LinkedIn of you, I was like, what the fuck's he on about?
Yeah. All right, perfect.
JJ, are you on X?
Yes.
But do you actually...
I do it 100% myself.
Yeah, I do as well, but I've stopped the last few months. I think
why?
It's like a cesspit. Honestly,
it's always been that.
Yeah. No, it's not.
It has.
It's gone worse in the last 6 months. It's like the division on there is unbelievable.
Are you letting him get to you?
What's the story?
Are you letting him get to you? You can't
no,
let it get to
yeah,
you.
He lets it affect him.
Yeah.
He lets it
yeah,
affect
JJ, no. Joseph, I'm talking about politics here. Nothing to do with football.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's insane.
It's terrible.
It doesn't matter. You could say the sky's blue and somebody say it's red.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
So what, there's no debate anymore. There's no sort of like conversation. It's like an attack.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the point
of
that?
It turned into that early doors girl. I thought it was one of the greatest platforms that's ever.
I agree.
Came up to Twitter. You can be someone in the far corners of the world, and you can, if you want to, you can message Messi and.
And you can debate. You can
debate. It turned into just a place to just be nasty.
Exactly. It used to be conversation, and maybe the odd debate. Maybe it get a bit heated, but now it's become abusive. It's become Yeah. Oh, it's horrible.
It's also all bots. Like the first 20 responses on anything would be just AI generated.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody.
JJ, bit of advice. LinkedIn. LinkedIn, JJ. Honestly, a bit more polished. You know what I mean? You're building a post, you know, sports career, athlete career. Just a bit more frame your career, sort of like, you know what I mean?
My driver told me he drove you to a parachute. Well, you go parachuting one time.
We've done this, parachute jump. Have you ever done one?
No.
Would you do one?
No, we won't.
Have you done? I went to a Navy SEAL event one time where I was like, if I'm ever going to do it, this is when I'm going to do it. And they had a 250-pound limit, so I didn't have to make the decision.
Oh,
so
yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. We did have that problem.
How many times have you done it?
Never was close to it. It just squeezed in, did it?
One time?
Yeah. 15,000 foot, which is the highest level you can go without without needing oxygen.
I think it was 14,000. Was it? Was it 14?
Would you do it again?
No, I wouldn't.
No.
But worth it once? Can we...
Do you know what? I'll take it in stages. What happened for me? Mm. The rickety plane on the way up. You've got to imagine. You've got the shutter. No good that bit. And then you've got the bit where you get pushed out towards the edge. Again, no good. Over the edge, the free fall bit was amazing. The free fall bit where you go fast. But then the bit where you think it's going to be good when they pull the parachute out and you realise you're floating towards the ground. Mm. You felt sick. Yeah. I felt sick.
I didn't enjoy any of it, mate. No, I didn't. It was all tight and it was uncomfortable. Son, chill.
No, it's all right. We all know you've got a penis. Not like.
Hello.
I'm sorry, Jill. I've got tight areas.
Have you done it, Jill?
No, I don't think. I'm scared of heights, mate. I hate heights.
Yeah, but I'm not a fan of heights or even flying for that matter. But
I've done a bungee, which is the closest I've come to. What was it, 160 or something? And it's the closest you've come to that. You know that free fall. It's the free fall bit before the bounce comes
nice.
In.
Thank
you, I don't like the vibe
that?
Of the.
I like the free fall bit. I thought it was amazing.
I don't like the vibe of the parachute where you got to pull. I just don't like that.
I did for League of the Run. I had to do a forfeit, and it was through the Grand Canyon. And you were sat on a swing, and it just went out, and then it just dropped you. And that was the worst thing. No, you're just like this.
How are you?
And then it just.
You okay?
And that was the worst.
Really
I thought
cool.
I was going to die.
You're going to have to go around all my accessories, unfortunately.
Did you do that?
The Grand Canyon, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you do that swing thing?
No.
Oh, my God. So they took me and Micah up, right? And he's so scared of heights. And then they were like,
we
don't think we'll get you back up. And he was like, he was proper kicking off. He's like, well, do you think I'm doing it then if you're just going to drop it? And he had to go back. He was fuming. And we all got like a really
a
nice meal. We all got a nice meal and everything. No, but the set to him, it was too heavy. So imagine going, I'll go on it then. You might be too heavy.
Don't give me any mites.
That's all me.
I don't trust like the person packing my parachute or the bungee jumper person. Like, there's too many people that could screw this up.
I'm like, one wrong move and you're dead. And they were like, it'll be the best feeling in the world when you're swinging through the canyon. I was like, just get us off. I hate it every minute.
Saying that, you'd do anything for money, Jill, wouldn't you?
It's a programme.
Or do you get paid for the programme?
It's brutal. He's in brutal form at the moment.
He is. It's because he cancelled all his things. Yes, he's cancelled Justine for this.
What's cancelled?
An advert.
Cancelled an advert.
I'm okay, thank you.
What for?
Because when I do the show, I'm focused, but when I turn up, everyone's in a hurry.
No.
No one's in a hurry.
What makes your hoodie, Gary?
What's that?
What makes your hoodie?
Nice one, Jim. Really got him.
Subtle.
He was really. You shouldn't have laughed.
Now he's in his head, because that's two times.
I don't think you can ever wear anything Burberry and think it's subtle.
But do you know
thank you. That's what I was saying, Jamie. I was saying, why don't they just have the Burberry kind of pattern just on the sleeve?
The last couple of years, Burberry's made it, but I think it's come into a bit of a. It's reinvented itself. New designer.
Oh, because you're wearing it, yeah?
New designer. And I think it's better. It's all right again.
It's always been that pattern.
Yeah, but you used to have basically the whole pattern everywhere, didn't you? Now it's a little bit subtle.
Did you wear it, but you ordered, didn't you?
No, I got from Liverpool.
To be honest, I do like that one on you.
Thank you.
But I think they could go subtle. I would do it on there, Jamie. You see, like, the sleeve or the little... Yeah. You see the little bit on the pocket?
Yeah.
Just a little fit there. Yeah. Subtle. Yeah. Shouting at people. Oh, I'm wearing
Right. JJ, you there with the Burnley cap on? Mm. Why Burnley? I mean, Burnley's a great town, but why?
Burnley?
Bernie's, I love Bernie.
I mean, I knew I wanted to get involved in ownership after my career. So the last couple of years of my career, I started looking at opportunities both in America, over here. I love football. I really do. I've watched the Premier League since 2010, 2011. Looked at a few clubs. Somebody said, you should talk to Burnley. I went up, visited, met with everybody, met with Vince, met with Alan, saw the town, and it just felt right. I'm from Wisconsin, so like Green Bay, you know, it's not a major city, it's not, but it's a town that loves and cares about its people and cares about its team. And I could tell that Burnley lives and dies with every single kick of the ball, and it just felt like something.
Did you play? Have you played football?
I played when I was a kid. I mean, just like elementary school, but I got a little too big to play.
When did the love come from? When did you start watching like the Premier League? And
so I think because I played so many American sports growing up, that the Premier League was always interesting to me because I didn't know a ton about it. And so as soon as I started to learn about it, I was infatuated with it. Mm. And I started to get all about European soccer. And then my wife is also a 10-year professional soccer player in America. So I just really enjoy all aspects of it and learning about it. And now I've dove all in and I'm gaining as much knowledge as possible.
How does it work where you say you want to get involved in any club? Is it basically like you've got a few quid, you want to put it into a football club, so you've got to say, how do you just turn up at Burnley and they...
Kind of. It actually is. So like, obviously you just see who has opportunities. You kind of pass the word around that you're looking for an opportunity. And I mean, we vetted out probably...
What is that opportunity? Obviously you put money, you want to say in basically running a football club. And
yeah, so that was a big thing for me, is I didn't want to... People say, do you want to invest in an NFL team? Well, sure, but there's $7 billion and you're put in 0.0001%, and why would the owner ever listen to you or have any sort of say? Yeah. I wanted to come to a club and find an ownership group that would allow me to, A, learn about the process, and B, have a little bit of, you know, say in it and really feel like I was a part of it. And that's what happened. I met with a few and they were like, sure, you can put money in, but Alan and Burnley were like, we'd love to have you a part of it. We'd love to have you integrated into it. And that's really why it was such a good fit.
Do you see this as like a almost work experience, and that in the future you actually want to completely own a football club, run it, you know, from top to bottom?
Yeah, I would love to. But knowing that there's a lot to learn and knowing that there's so much that goes into it besides just, obviously I have the athlete mindset of, you know, kind of what it takes from that side, but the business side and the books and running and organizing basically a corporation, yeah.
When you retired, did you not want to just take a break? I couldn't think all that hard work and then, oh, now I'll start running a club.
It's a balance I'm trying hard to find. But as you guys all know, it's for athletes, we're so used to working. Like, we're so used to putting in that work and having something to put our energy towards and put our passion towards. And the other big thing that it's done for me is it filled that competitive itch.
Yeah.
Because when you're done playing, you don't get the highs and the lows. You don't get those adrenaline rushes or those deep lows. And this has absolutely done that for me, sometimes a little too much on the low side. And it's also extremely frustrating because I'm sitting there watching the matches and I can't do anything about it.
Right. You just want to go on and like smash people and stuff.
Yeah, lately a few referees I've wanted to have some conversations with. Yeah,
that foul, that so-called foul on Aiden Nouri. They gave the free kick and then they scored from.
It's so frustrating. And, you know, at the beginning of this, back a year ago when I invested, you know, you hear things from the fans, the supporters, where they're like, you know, the refs against small-town clubs. You know, and I'm like, sure. Like, I'm a player. I know we complain about refs all the time. But then as the season starts to go on, you're like, wait a second. There's a lot of interesting things happening. I've gone on Twitter before, and I'm like, I don't know how the fine system works over here. I just play dumb sometimes.
Right.
Like, I don't know how this works, but these refs are pretty bad. So I know Vince can't say it. I know Alan can't say it, but I'll take the hit, you know.
What university did you come out of?
Wisconsin.
Right.
Yeah. So my brothers and I all played at Wisconsin.
Right. Yeah. And how did that work in respect of your career? Was you a good player at that age? How was you?
So I came out of high school.
How tall was you? Were you still quite tall?
I actually grew.
Let him answer the fish.
Just like I mean, it's like
what were your grades at school?
And then what were your grades? You shut your
mouth. I grew 2 inches in college actually, so I was like a little bit of a late bloomer. I kind of hit puberty a little bit later than most, so I grew more and got bigger throughout college, and then I actually started at Central Michigan University, transferred to Wisconsin, walked on, no scholarship. It means basically try out. It's pretty much kind of like a tryout. And then I worked my way up to being a starter there, and then I went on, obviously, to the NFL and did that. But, yeah,
It wasn't like a easy traditional path, but it also wasn't crazy. Yeah, I earned it.
What is the traditional path?
I mean, I would say just recruited out of high school. You get a scholarship to a school, you go play at that school. Like, you're kind of a high recruit. Like, yeah. We have a star system, 1 through 5. 5 stars, the best high school athletes.
And you were?
On one site, I was a 2-star. On one site, I was a 0-star. So I was. But I wasn't. I don't want it to seem like a sob story. Like, I was decent. I was okay in high school. But then just grew and worked hard, made my way up. My mom and dad are basically every, like, my dad was a firefighter, so I learned a lot of hard work and things from being around the firehouse as a kid. My mom started as a secretary at her company and worked all the way up to being the vice president. So just between the two of them, I kind of learned all about hard work and what drive and passion can do for you, and they taught me the
way. Was the NFL the dream then? Was that your dream, or?
I actually grew up playing hockey when I was a kid, right. So it was hockey to start, and then it's just an expensive sport, so I couldn't play it forever, so I switched over in football. The NFL was definitely the dream, and what I did when I was a freshman or sophomore in high school is I looked at the NFL draft, and I looked at the top 10 picks, and I said, okay, who of that am I most like? And I found one guy, and then I just looked at his height, his weight, his speed, his college, like his grades from college, and I said, okay, how do I get there? And I worked backwards to today, and I said, what can I do today to be that guy in 5 years, you know?
Right. You are so humble, though. You're like one of the greatest NFL players.
Appreciate that.
No, but he is very
Jill
humble,
wants an autograph. That's it.
Do you know what? As soon as I told my brother that I was doing this, because he's a big NFL, he's like, you've got to get us an autograph. And I tell him I work with you guys all the time. Never asked.
Yeah, we don't like him neither.
Well, I appreciate that. I must say that being around this table for me is very, very cool. Like, you guys are all legends of the game, and not only from what you did on the pitch, but also what you guys have done in post-career, and all this entertainment has been very, very enjoyable to watch for an American Premier League fan, but also now from an ownership side, you guys are phenomenal.
What's interesting, I think you're a big fan of the NFL. Obviously, you've just said about your brother, and you're watching the Premier League. Do you think, sort of, in this country, NFL is massive? Because for me, I haven't got a clue really about American football. It's took off the last few years, hasn't it? I think there is a big following now.
Yeah, of course. The last few years, with obviously Sky covering the games, and obviously the games coming over here. There's been a few games, I think, out of obviously Spurs at Wembley. Twickenham, I don't know if there's a few games at Twickenham. So, yeah.
When I started coming over here, you know, 12, 13 years ago, my rookie year, nobody knew anything. They didn't know much about the game. I remember when games first started to come over here, people only cheered the kicks. Like, they just wanted to see the kicks. Now, every time I can walk down the street in Manchester and people ask for pictures, autographs. Like, that is completely different than it used to be, and they're knowledgeable about it. Everybody has a favorite team. Everybody has a favorite player. They're asking me about free agency. It's very cool how people over here have accepted it. And I think same thing on the other side. You used to never really see as many kits as you see over in America now. You know, they're doing fan zones and everything where there's people, thousands of people turning up in Premier League kits. It's really cool.
As I said, I don't know too much about it, but I watched a program on Netflix I thought was brilliant called The Quarterback with, I can't remember the other, but
Holmes,
Patrick
Cousins.
Mahomes was on it and the other people. And I was thinking about that role that they have in the team. I've never seen nothing like it. It almost feels like the most probably most important position in any sports team, because I couldn't relate that to football in terms of how much information they have to take. And it's almost like the manager is on the pitch. Is that a fair way of saying it?
100%. If you don't have a good quarterback, you don't have a chance. It's just a fact of life. Like, it is somewhat unlike any other. I would say basketball, if you have a super, superstar, a Steph Curry, a LeBron, somebody that can pour in points. But in football, if you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a chance. And they literally touch the ball every single play, so they do affect it.
That's why you love nailing them, yeah?
Yeah,
I mean, sacks, man.
They make it harder and harder now with the rules. Like, you have to hit them a perfect way, like, otherwise you're getting... I've incurred some fines over the course of my career. I'm sure you know.
But you get huge bonuses for sacks as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, you make a lot of money if you can sack the quarterback many times.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
What for anti tackling the quarterback? You get paid.
Well, you would have been a millionaire.
We'd have been loaded.
I would have been the quarterback. What's the bonus for?
I mean, it just depends. Like, you obviously can get a better next contract if you tackle him. But B, every contract is different. So, I mean, a guy might have in his contract, if you get 10 sacks, you get an extra $2 million. Yeah. You get 15. If you get to 15, you get an extra three. You know.
What was your average each season? I'm going to see a couple of clips of you.
You were leading, weren't you? Twice.
I mean, I am the only person ever to have 20.
Yeah. Oh no! Wait, how many times
brother,
though?
I think my brother just did it.
Did he?
Yeah, oh, really? Of us.
Yeah. I think we're the only two people ever to have 20 sacks twice.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
But is there certain quarterbacks you were really after?
Every single one.
Every one.
Every single one. I hate them all. Yeah.
Silly question. Sorry.
Let's have a quick look.
Yes.
There the we go. Bonus for your tackle is a...
Let's have a quick look.
Yeah.
Easy,
Jim. I almost tackled these two once at Turf Moor.
Yeah.
The
of yeah. There you go.
Bam!
I missed it. It was that quick.
Yeah, yeah.
So your eyes light up when you just taking.
Oh, that's the greatest feeling
is
in the world.
Is it? You just knew you were going to nail him at the back.
Yeah, yeah.
Who did you nail there?
That's Josh Allen. He's a good for the Bills. This is a
look,
playoff
he's not
game.
Done. Look, you've just moved his arms. Look there, JJ.
This is a playoff game. I actually tore my pec off the bone 2 months earlier, and this is my first game back. So that was that one felt good.
Oh, did I actually read something that you got your heart? There was something the matter with your heart, and then you played the same week.
Yeah. It was pretty wild. My heart. Went into AFib, so it was beating irregularly. So
does it count against the Jets? No. No.
That's actually one of my very good... Oh, it's not. That's Sam Darnold. Never mind.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that was the first play of the game. It's a great way to start. It's like scoring off the kickoff.
Wow. It's so quick.
Speeding.
You
only have...
Don't you wish you could do that?
Have you got a time and you have to get to him? The top quarterbacks
would be gone... I mean, Tom Brady is hands down the guy that gets the ball out of his hands the quickest, and sometimes he'll have the ball out of his hands in 1.8, 2.1 seconds.
Because he knows he can't run, yeah.
But he's brilliant. He also is so smart. He knows exactly who's going to... He knows the coverage. He knows who's going to be open. Mm. It's like...
And plus, he's defensive
like
guys.
Like a finding a pass. He already knows where it's going to go before he gets it.
And with the guys you're protecting, they are obviously the best around him, because if he... If he can get it away, he's going to probably cause you problems. So he's got the best around him, right?
Yes, of course.
Is he investing in Birmingham? Is he?
He's in Birmingham City.
But is he an investor?
Have you spoke to him about it in terms of sort of like coming into...
Yeah, we just spoke this week about it because they're trying to get out, So we're both kind of in a similar situation, just different leagues right now. So, yeah, he's... I know he's working with them on their training and some of the physical aspects because he's got his business as well from that. But, yeah, it's... I mean, we love it.
You know, David, you said you've got the record for 20 sacks in a season.
Twice.
What? I'm sure the shape of you and how you do it, and you know, people are sort of trying to do that themselves in the NFL. Mm-hmm. What's special about you that you get more quicker reading the game? What is it about that?
I mean, there's a lot of luck involved for sure, but I would say, it's really hard. I think it's a combination of size, speed, athleticism. When I was training in the offseason, what I would always try and do is create the best overall athlete, not necessarily the best football player. So I wanted to be as big as I could possibly be, as strong as I could possibly be, but also as fast and flexible as I could be. So I would do some of my running with the wide receivers because I wanted to be as fast as them. I would do my lifting with some of the offensive line because I wanted to be as strong as them. So I figured if I could take the best attributes from everybody and try and put it into one, I may not get there, but whatever I create is going to be better than what I was going to be. Mm. And then I get to training camp and I hand that to the coaches and I say, here, this is the athlete. Now you tell me what to do. Mm. And they put me in great spots and I had good teammates. And
it's a great mentality. What does it take to get this big? Like, what do you win?
Jill, looking him up and down. Look at you.
No, but like...
That's one of the nicest parts about being retired is that I don't have to eat at the same level that I had to eat at before, which sounds like a great problem to have, you know, but like, it's an interesting thing being in England. Finding enough protein over here is difficult. Like the meals
like
just
carbs,
don't have the same amount of
protein.
There's so much bread. There's so much bread. beans on toast, like eggs on toast,
night.
Like everything's on toast,
bread
which
night.
Is delicious, but I'm like, I need some steak. Like I need some fish,
So how many calories when you played?
So when I was playing, my average was probably about 7,500 calories a day.
Wow.
7,500 calories a day?
Wow.
That's
right
now,
I'm on about 4,500 calories a day right now.
And doing what training with that?
I train weights 4 days a week, and I do cardio 3 days a week right now.
I feel like we should feed you.
It's like I've had a full English this morning. I'm good.
So how often will you have to eat? So you'll eat, obviously, breakfast and your lunch. So what?
At my peak, it was two breakfasts, two lunch, two dinner.
Jesus. Yeah.
It was like a job. I mean, you had to, and it all obviously had to be fairly healthy. So it's a lot of plain chicken breasts. It's a lot of white rice. It's a lot of just basic stuff.
Mm.
And it's, which is harder to get your calories in.
Is there any team you wish you could have played for? No? Were you always settled where you were? Or?
I mean, I loved being in Houston. I had never been there before I got drafted. The people were unbelievable to me. It was great.
In the end, because when you got drafted, they weren't so keen, huh?
Yeah, no, they booed me when
they
I got
booed
drafted.
Booed you, bro?
Yeah, but I don't blame them. They don't know. Like, it's like any sports fan, you know? You don't know until you know. Yeah. And it also gave me a little bit of that motivation to be like, all right,
yeah, I'll show you. Over. Yeah.
But, I mean, I did. I grew up in Wisconsin, and like I said, I grew up in Green Bay. Like, the Packers, they have a little bit of a different relationship with their fans than anybody else because they're a community-owned team. Right, it's a small town. So that's one that always would have been really cool.
If someone of your quality, which you're the best in your position in the league, in this country, you would be picked up by the best team and you'd be winning Super Bowls, you'd be winning the sort of Premier League. What, is that, why has that not happened to you?
There's so many things over here that are fascinating to me, and part of the reason, like, so like, A, the agent culture over here is unbelievable. I've never seen anything like the agent culture with the fees and the way that they control so much of it. I mean, I think, like, our agents in America, you basically have just a standard set fee. Every single player has the same. I mean, your agent will not make more than 3% of your contract.
He sounds over, like you're pretty right over there.
Yeah, over here, it's the Wild Wild West. I mean, like, absolutely. Your agent fees are through the roof, and one agent could ask for this much. And the other thing is, obviously, promotion and relegation makes everything different.
Yes.
Like, in our league, you know, you're the worst team in the league, you're getting the first draft pick. So, like, there's this parity amongst it all. The goal of the NFL is basically for every team to be level. The middle.
That's it.
Yeah.
And so it's competitive. Over here, promotion and relegation, your team gets relegated, now half your players are going to be asking to go somewhere else, or to, you know, it's
all about different. Helping.
It's that trading as well. You know, when, like, so for instance, if the worst team in the league, they get the pick, but then they can trade with someone else and say, okay, you can have him, but you give us these two. So it still works out.
So it all somehow works out. Whereas, you know, I mean, I'll never forget the first match of this season. We played Man City, and somebody texted me a graphic of it. I was at the match, but somebody texted me a graphic, and it said, Man City's current defenders cost this much. Burnley's entire history since 1882 cost less.
Wow.
I mean, and you're sitting there watching the match, and, like, you're cheering for your squad, and you want your boys to do good. But at the same time, you're like, all right, I have to be a little realistic about this, you know?
Yeah.
It's a billion-pound squad against a 100-million-pound squad.
You know the draft when you're talking about sort of the best, almost the best player, or the first draft pick goes to the team at the bottom? What I can't get my head around is that you've got no say in that whatsoever. So when this draft happens, you can go to anywhere in the country, at any team, at any level, no matter how good a player you are.
Correct. And I think that's
mad.
Yeah, you're going to... I mean, that's the wild part about
the draft. We're not used to it.
So, like, I'm sitting there on draft night.
If I'm a player, obviously, you want to win the Super Bowl, or you want to win the Champions League or the Premier League. And imagine that was in here now. And then you just... So you go from, say, you're the best player in the league, you're at Nottingham Forest, you go for the British transfer record, but then a team in the middle of the table just buy you. I'd be a bit like, what?
Like De Bruyne going Sheffield United next
season. But also, on the flip side of that, wouldn't you say that if you just sit here and you have the chance, you're the best player in the league and you have a chance to go anywhere in the world and you go to the team that's already winning, like if you go to Real Madrid, like you could be like, well, yeah, they've won dozens of championships. You're just going to go and you're just going to go win another championship there. Whereas this system is, like now that's why nobody else has a chance. Because everybody's just going to continue to choose to go win trophies.
So does everybody have... Well, okay, as I said, I don't know too much about it, but say the Super Bowl, is winning the Super Bowl almost spread right through the league, or is it still only sort of five or six teams?
It's not spread.
It's only a few. Like, the Chiefs at the moment are brilliant, aren't they?
Yes, but again, you look at the Chiefs, let's call it, you know, 10 years ago, nobody was calling them a Super Bowl favorite, but then you would also say they're not in, like, the biggest, most sexy market. They're in the dead center of the country in a little bit of a smaller market. They got a good quarterback, and they built a really good team around him, and then you win.
That's what gives them the
chance. But that's what, like, every single market in the NFL feels like at some point they have a chance to do
that.
Like, truthfully, if you're being honest in this country, do the bottom teams truthfully think they have a chance to win the Premier League?
But you know, when teams towards the end of the season are all struggling, you're out of the playoffs, with some teams almost not want to win, knowing they get,
happen. It's a fan thing, and I'm sure in the ownership level at some point they're watching the game thinking, like, it wouldn't be the worst thing if we lost, but nobody, I don't think anybody is actively doing anything to do that, but that is the other side of it, is obviously in this league, you're in the bottom three, you're out. There's a whole incentive to be playing strong at the end of the year, whereas in the NFL, It's a little easier.
You couldn't
easier.
Go out to lose, though, in that sport. Imagine, oh, I'll no, go no, in no, 30%, not going out to lose,
but the ownership thinking of, well, if we get the first draft, if you're the worst team and if you lose the last few games, you're already the playoffs anyway, Joe. You're not going to get relegated, so there's nothing to be gained, but you can maybe get the best player.
We actually had, in Houston, we had a situation where the last game of the season, they were currently sitting for the number one pick. They threw like a Hail Mary at the end of the game, won the game. Mm-hmm. And so like the fans were excited to win the game, but also mad they didn't get the pick. But then full circle moment, they ended up getting the number two pick. Okay. They drafted C.J. Stroud, who is currently like a superstar phenom quarterback. Right. So it all worked out
well. It pans out, yeah.
See?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Talk to me about your brothers, because how does it be that you make history in your position, but then your brother is now making history in that same position? That's a freak.
Wow.
It's unbelievable, yeah. It's really, really cool. So we are unbelievably close. Me and both my brothers talk every single day. We grew up obviously pushing each other, playing together. Derek played 7 years. He just retired after playing 7 years. And TJ obviously is one of the best defensive players in the history of the game. And it is really crazy. We were just talking about this because he went to accept an award, and they told us him and I combined won 7 of the last 10 of this award. And he sent me a picture of when we flew to accept the first one, and he was like a little kid on the jet.
Oh my God.
And so he was like, I'll never forget this day when I watched you accept it, and now for me going back to accept it.
Brilliant.
And it's just beautiful. Really incredible for us to experience it and to think about it. If you could sit there and talk with your brother, about what it's like to play at the
highest. Not about the awards.
Don't diss the Nevilles, bro.
But like you guys have like this group. Imagine if it's family to be able to talk about like what the locker room is like.
Yes.
What like on your darkest days when he's gone through injuries and I've gone through injuries. Like nobody can talk you through it like somebody who's been there, and we have that bond. It's really cool.
Do you have a content platform in the US? As brothers, have you thought about that? Because the Kelce brothers have this really
great at it.
Amazing sort of podcast now, don't they? Where they sort of do it together. Are you thinking of that?
So TJ's a little different from me in that standpoint. Derek's kind of right in the middle, but he doesn't love the media. You know, like he's not like the most, he's very, very, football.
Okay.
Like, and so we've talked about it. I think it'd be great because he's hilarious, but he also is a little more.
Would you see it as a distraction, you think? Like a.
I think he's extremely focused right now, and he really wants to. Yeah. So like during the season, it's really hard. Like, and I give credit to people who can do it. But I mean, imagine you're coming off a really big loss against a rival, and then you got to go in on Tuesday and do a podcast about it.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
We need a podcast name.
Like,
say
like
what?
During your day, would there ever have been somebody doing a podcast the day after?
Say what?
Would you say, Jill, what are you going to call this podcast?
You
wouldn't
do it. Say what?
Oh, I already got
you,
it. There
you go.
Executive producer.
Can I have like.
Gary will put it on his
3%.
LinkedIn.
Well, Roy, think about that now in terms of sort of imagining you being in the dressing room and thinking that a player was doing a podcast.
No, but it wouldn't just be me, Gary, would it? No, it'd be everybody.
No, but I think you. I can only think of you.
No, I think
though.
You'd be the same. I think a lot of the senior players, if players were off, well, we'd get frustrated with players who were going off doing other stuff anyway. If you had a busy schedule, you wouldn't be happy with it. I'd agree. I don't think it's right for a player. I think your focus should be 100% on the game.
Well, there's a couple of lads, isn't there? Is it Antonio and Callum Wilson are doing something?
Yeah.
And it pops up whenever they sort of make a joke about maybe someone who's missed a chance or something.
But the Kelce brothers,
what you've just said, though, the Kelce brothers have defied that, haven't they, in the sense that they have this podcast that I saw last week, a headline, that they're going for a $40 million deal.
It's unbelievable.
It's like a massive thing.
The thing that's interesting to me and that I've noticed throughout the course of my career, because social media has kind of come along during the course of my career, is that people have, at the very beginning, I think there were a lot of people that said, why are you posting on social media? Why are you doing this? You need to be 100% focused on football. But then over time, people like started to understand there's 24 hours in a day. Yeah. I can train, I can study, I can do everything for 8-10 hours a day. There's still 14 more hours left.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, I do think that we're starting to understand. I always think over here with the headlines in the newspapers, somebody will be like, Marcus Rashford goes out to dinner after Manchester United lost. I'm like, well, should he not eat? Like, we're not supposed to have a life. I do think that you can't. But I also think there is a very fine line between doing a podcast and, like, either giving away secrets or talking about things that are very sensitive inside the locker room, you know?
Yeah, no, I think you have to be open-minded, all of course. I'm certainly not a dinosaur, but I think there's a time and a place. But if you have a regular podcast on a Tuesday or Wednesday and you're a player at the top level, I think I would disagree with people who say, I think that can be a distraction for a player.
Yeah.
Particularly if you're on the back of defeat and you're in the next day and everyone's having a bit of a laugh, you're like... Because I don't think you should laugh. I don't think you should laugh for a week or two if you've been beaten. I wouldn't be into that.
I hear you, Roy.
I'm with you. That mentality is a tough thing that I've had to learn over time, especially as a leader in a locker room, is when to impose that mindset and when to back off a little bit too, because kids are also changing over time. Got young guys coming to the league are changing over time. And somebody told me this once, and it was a very interesting quote. They said, if you hold every single player to the standard you hold yourself to, you're always going to be disappointed. Mm-hmm. And that was just because, like, you hold yourself to such this incredibly high standard. And truthfully, some of these young guys just don't know yet. They still have to learn how to be a pro. They still have to learn how to handle it. Mm-hmm. And yes, you want to bring them up to your level, but you also can't be so angry every time.
No, you can.
Let's talk. let's talk about that, how someone coming to the end of their career can help a young player in the dressing room. How did you deal with that? Because you'd look at them and think they're so different than I was when, obviously, I was that age. But you obviously have to work with them and get the best out of them.
Sometimes I was good at it, sometimes I was bad at it. I had to learn also how to be a leader. And there's definitely situations I look at where I say, oh, man, I could have done a better job there. But the thing that I had to always remember was...
Which time do you think of it? Which player do you look at?
Early on, for sure. Like, especially... So my second... My first year in the league, I started slow, but then became a pretty good player. In the second year, I was a captain, and you're still trying to figure yourself out a little bit. I mean, like we talked about, I moved to a city that I'd never been to before, and I'm trying to set up my own life, and then I have success, and we made the playoffs for the first time ever. So all these things, and then you're also trying to be a 22, 23-year-old captain of the team and helping lead these guys. I feel like I could have been better there. But the thing I always try and remember is they don't know everything I know yet. And that's a hard switch for me to make sometimes, is like, I go out to practice and I have this knowledge because of the experience, and I get mad at a guy because he doesn't know that if they line up like this, they're gonna run this play. And I'm like, why didn't you know that? But he doesn't know. Yeah. I have to give him that knowledge and I have to help pull him along. Or a guy shows up late to training and 2 days in a row and you get mad at him, he doesn't, like, just little things that how to be a professional. You're studying your film, you're doing your weights, maybe the little extra things. It's the things that have become natural to me over time, but it's not natural to them, and you have to teach them. And that's really hard. I think being a professional is something that is actually taught. It's not just a normal thing.
Do you think it's hard to teach that sometimes with the players? Because I remember I was someone who I had to do a lot of extras, but sometimes I'd feel like some of the younger players just wouldn't want to do it, and it's hard. How do you, like, teach that mindset? I think there's a lot of you've either got it or you haven't.
Yes. And it's very interesting, too, because you speak about there's different talent levels. Like, like, I may have had to work harder than somebody else because they're... But a coach once said this, the better the player, the longer the leash. Mm. Right. So if a guy can miss a few buses if he's scoring a few touchdowns. Yes. You know, like if you're, if you're the last guy on the roster, you make one bus, score. You're gone.
Why are you bringing me into it?
That was Ian. He was always late for training.
I wasn't always late.
You're a goal scorer.
I was on a long leash.
George Graham changed training.
Listen to this. Tony Adams, see what you've done, Tom? That's bollocks.
You score the goals, nobody cares.
Thank you, JJ.
That's also the other thing. Like, if I ever did anything wrong, I was like, oh, boy, I need to have 3 sacks this game. Otherwise,
But have you been in the Burnley dressing room? Do you get to go in there with and speak to the guys?
Yeah, it's literally my favorite part of the job because I mean, just like you got, like the dressing room is the thing you miss the most when you're done playing. Just the camaraderie, the atmosphere. So I spent a week with them up at training, out at practice, in the weight room, in the dressing room. After every match, I go in the dressing room. I sit with Vince for a few hours. We talk about the match. I talk with the players. It's truly one of my favourite parts.
He's seen as one of the big leaders of, you know, not just of Manchester City, but sort of the Premier League era. Yeah. He's one of those figures great that you captain, look at, isn't he? I mean, how do you see him as a leader?
He's great. I think that the way that he commands the respect of the players because of his knowledge. Also, I mean, he's a brilliant man. He speaks, I think, like 6-7 languages. Yes. So to watch him out of practice, and he's speaking to Fofana in one language, and he's speaking to Essignon in another language, and he's just seamlessly moving between these guys, and it's incredible. And then he also keeps a level head about him, unless the ref.
Not the last week.
But like all season long, even when things haven't been going the way we wanted to, just the mindset and the ability to keep the players moving, it's been really enjoyable.
But are you already planning now? Would you be thinking, I don't want to be jumping the gun because you're still fighting hard to stay up, thinking about the championship next year? Would you have to?
You have
as
to.
As an investor now?
It would be naive of us not to be planning for both scenarios, of course. Yeah. So we're in our board meetings and in all of our discussions, we're talking about what each scenario would look like.
Are you trying to take your money back?
It's so funny. It's so funny because I post on every game. I post all about Burnley and everything, and every single post there'll be somebody that says, "Oh yeah, we'll see where you are next year when you're in the championship." Yeah. Like, you bet you're not going to any games in the championship. I'm like, well, A, I went to 4 games in the championship last year. Mm. B, like, I'm not an investor that said, oh, I'm only going to be here from the Premier League. Like, I'm here for the fight. I'm an athlete. I am a part of this club now, and I want to be here for it. Yeah, I'm going to be right there in the championship fighting to get back up. Who jumps? I mean, well, maybe you. It sounds like from the conversation earlier, you can't jump off the ship just because the team's not going to win. Mm. Like, I'm
not turning up for a show.
Yeah, Jamie, like,
that's kind of what I was talking about when you were talking about the draft situation where a player just wants to go to the best team where they can win. Where's the fun in that? You know, like, the fun in it is, yeah, we might get relegated and we might have to fight our way back up, but we're going to fight. Like, and I want to be by their side for that fight. I don't want to then now just jump to Ipswich because they're coming up, or, you know.
Sunderland. We could do with someone like you.
Sunderland till I die is truly.
I've just watched it.
It's so good. Yeah. And like those types of documentaries, that one specifically was really, really good, have done wonders in getting Americans more interested, because that's some of the stuff that they talk to me about most. That song at the beginning of that show is.
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it?
It's brilliant. Yeah. It's so good. And that club, like, watching that show is wildly interesting for many reasons, but just because of some of the stuff that they've been through. And It's pretty crazy.
Do you get subtitles?
We're the lads.
I'm a club owner with a mentality that the money that I put in, I'm not going to get back.
Yes.
That's just how I think.
Yeah.
How much you put in?
Too much.
But that's my mentality. Yeah, so it's not an investment. And I sometimes think the amount of American investment that's coming, not just from ex-athletes, but also from really experienced, sharp business people have put money into English football clubs. Is it the same mentality where you put the money in with thinking, I'm probably not going to get this back? It's actually just a bit of a passion.
For me, yes. I think there's other people, obviously, who look at it as a business endeavor. But I do think that our group especially, like, you have to look at it like that, because also from a passion standpoint and from being able to handle situations like we're in. I mean, if I was looking at this purely as a financial play, I'm looking at the end of this season, I'm like, oh my gosh, 150 million pounds for staying up, or 40, 50 million for someone.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God. But no, I'm looking at this as a competitor. So yes, I look at it that way. How's your experience been?
It mixed.
Yeah.
Do you know what you say about the actual, like, I watch every game, whether it's actually live or on the link, that feeling of up and down you still get from Salford. That's you know, obviously United as well sometimes, but you still get that feeling of up and down like you did when you were a player. But it's interesting, it's frustrating sometimes, but then I actually love it.
How involved are you day to day?
I was involved for 8 seasons, and then I was the operational shareholder for 8 seasons, and then the last 2.
And then there was a big board meeting.
Yeah. No, I was only doing it 2 days a week. I was almost doing it like semi-professional. So now Nicky Butt's gone in, Ryan Giggs has gone in, Paul Scholes gone in. They're full time. Yeah. So they're in now full time. They've been doing it for two seasons. And
better or worse than the last eight?
No, there's been some pain of transition.
You missed that side of it, Ed, the day-to-day stuff.
I missed the buzz of it because on match day, what I would say is it's an easier match day for me now because I don't feel as responsible because I'm not the operational shareholder. So I feel more that that's the thing. But I just think from a financial side, I just feel it's like, it's a bit like going to a casino. You're probably going to lose. The reality of it is you're going to lose. Yeah. Your money's going to go away. And I remember Steve Parrish, when I went to see him, he said he had two computers in his office, and he did have two laptops in his office. And that was the Premier League P&L for next season, and that was the Championship. Wow. And he said he always had them there, and he looked at them throughout the season to understand. And the difference was staggering to me.
Can you enjoy it, Gareth? Do you enjoy it?
I don't think the money that we're losing is money that would be sort of like scary to us. Whereas I look at the money in the Premier League and I look at that difference, I'm sure he said like £92 million difference. Wow. And that is like off the edge of a cliff. I disagree with it strongly. I believe that the reason there's parachutes is because it's a steep drop.
Right.
There shouldn't be a steep drop, it should be a step.
Yeah.
You shouldn't need a parachute.
Right.
And for me, I think Burnley, if they go down this season, should have sporting disappointment, but they shouldn't have financial, almost like, it's bad.
Oh, it's incredible. But then the thing in the question, similar to the agents, but similar with the spending in this league, is how do you put the toothpaste back in the tube? Like, it's out there, you know, like, and the money's out there and the billions of pounds have been spent. How do you try and reel this whole thing back in now that it's out there?
You've invested heavily in the squad as well.
Yeah, we have, of course. And so
do you have, that is probably too much, you probably won't be able to answer that from a point of view, because one of the things that I think the owners have done, they have the trigger drop in the contract if you're not in the Premier League.
Right.
So actually the wages fall in line.
Yeah, that's a pretty standard thing.
Standard. Yeah, yeah. Burnley did.
Which is wild to me. Like, that's something that I learned when I came over here that I did not know earlier, is that like player contracts being changed based on which league you're in, which makes sense. I mean, if you just physically look at it, but in America, that's a vastly different. Whereas we have guys with fully, fully guaranteed contracts, not in the NFL, but other sports where a team might cut you and you can get paid for 10, 12 years after
Jesus
you're done.
Jesus Christ.
Bobby Bonilla is technically still being playing 30 years after because he deferred his contract. I mean, he's getting paid every January. I think he gets paid $2 million.
Who's that?
This guy named Bobby Bonilla.
He's plays a smart guy.
For the Mets. Yeah, he's just, for the rest of his career, he gets paid out every February,
Jeez, I think that ended with Leeds with Robbie Fowle. I think they just stopped playing Robbie last week.
But is that owner who did that contract probably will regret that now, surely?
I mean, it was like a deferred contract because of their money situation at the time, so it was an interesting situation. Jeez. But there's, I mean, that's like...
The baseball players do a lot of
Shohei Ohtani's deal that he just did is a deferred contract after 10 years. He gets
the money after 10 years,
What's the biggest... just relating it to the Premier League, I'm trying to think who's got the biggest contract in the Premier League. Probably Erling Haaland. But what's the biggest contract in the NFL for a player?
Mahomes? Biggest contract in the NFL is... So Mahomes would have, I believe, the overall cash because he did a 10-year deal. But if you go year by year, I think the biggest per year money right now is somewhere right around $50 million. I think it's 45
million?
$50 million for 1 year. Yeah.
So it's $1 million a week.
Million a week.
Is Haaland the highest paid?
But it always blew my mind how you guys do.
It's all right for league
by
two.
Because I didn't know. Because we only have 17.
Oh, you said that whenever you had it in your head, didn't you?
I was gonna bring that up earlier, but I didn't know.
Let's have an opinion.
League two striker. I mean, are you smoking weed?
He watches a lot of weed. League two.
I don't know what the big deal is. I give him praise every week. I give Man City praise, and I think he's an amazing striker. But his general play is that of a League Two player. And I'm glad you're not agreeing with me. I don't expect people to agree with me.
It's just harsh.
That's good.
The League Two comparison's harsh.
He didn't even call League One.
His general play, week in, week out, is nowhere near good enough.
He literally had the argument to win the Ballon d'Or last year. I always screw that up. There's a clip for the internet.
Yeah, as a goal scorer.
It's an American asshole.
As a goal scorer and a striker, the best. And I said that. Jesus, people... See, this is what happens. People don't listen.
So when you say general play, you're talking about...
His link-up play, the way he lays the ball off. Yeah. Sometimes the options he gives his teammates or the options he doesn't give them. As a striker and a goal scorer, the best in the world. Some of his other play is that as of a League Two player.
He's a great goal scorer. He's not a great player, I would say. I think that sometimes there is a difference. I mean, would you agree with that, Ricey? Or do you think there is a difference?
I think the critique is pretty on point. The only thing with it is mentioning a League Two, because that's what everybody's everybody remembers.
He's a pretty decent standard, isn't he?
Yeah, but the thing is,
he knows how to get the clicks. I mean, it's very good.
If we're going to talk about...
I guarantee Pep, deep down, Pep's going to defend him, of course, but I guarantee Pep will sit with the staff and go, of course he's got to improve on this.
He has to.
The League Two stuff.
But this is what I'm going to say. As a striker, this is it's part of the game you have to have. I think that when you look at him scoring, he's kind of clocking that level in respect of... When the guys have got time, they could play it through to him. He goes, bam, he scores. But there's games like the one we saw against Arsenal. And a game like even last year when they beat Arsenal 4-1, it was holding on him. He was able to deal with that. But when you're playing against that kind of calibre of defender, you have to do more to make sure that you can at least keep it. That's the thing, when you watch him in those situations. Like that game, De Bruyne was shut down, Foden was shut down, Bernardo Silva. His service was restricted to him. So then what you need from him is a little bit more savvy. Remember, he's only 23. He's still learning the game. You need a bit more savvy in how you're going to make moves to get time on the ball, if it's your weakness, to get the touch to lay it off. What you're seeing at the moment is he's not doing that.
The Arsenal game was tough because Arsenal did do well. But I'm on about in general. Yeah. I don't think what I said was such a big deal. He is a young player and he will improve it. And I guarantee you, Pep sits with his staff every day and goes, he needs to do more. He needs to do more when he's not quite getting loads of chances or loads of goals.
Yeah, but he might be working on that, Roy.
Of course he's working on it.
If he's 23 right now.
Absolutely he's working on it.
If Haaland's going to get
mature at the right time.
Yeah, if we're talking about Haaland and he's going to be playing for the best, he's probably going to go on and play for the best. That is part of his game he's going to have to improve on.
The thing with Haaland is I don't think he cares about the other stuff.
Probably not.
There was a spell last season, I think, where Pep was asking him to actually come deeper and get involved in midfield, and he looked a bit awkward. It just doesn't suit him. I don't think he wants to. I don't think he's interested.
You have to still have that in your game as a striker.
I know, but I think the way Man City play, they've got that many players who are in that area. And I agree with Roy, sort of Foden's in there, De Bruyne's in there, Bernardo Silva, who can do that sort of link play. And he's just, I don't care about it. I actually go back, it's not just the Arsenal game. Remember his performance at Anfield?
Yes.
He's almost like, I think, if he doesn't score, you don't actually know he's...
Right.
Yeah.
This is what he's
but do you think the way City play, because, you know, like as a midfielder or if you are a striker dropping in, like you want to get your touches on the ball early doors, touches in, but he doesn't really get the opportunity.
He has to lose touches every game, doesn't he?
Yeah, but that's what I mean. So if you're not getting the rhythm in your play, like, you know, when sets...
His game is not about getting rhythm.
So I think it's difficult then for him because how many touches does he have a game?
But
when he does get them touches... Make him important, count.
But
I'm
not
about his general link up,
like
just
them.
Little balls lay off, it's behind somebody or it's too far ahead of somebody. A couple of times I saw him trying to head it, and he looked like he didn't know what he was doing. And he will learn his game.
You know the problem he'll have?
Absolutely.
The problem he'll have is as you get into those games of real importance, top games, he will be targeted. Because then what will happen is that when I started, my weakness was holding and linking the play. So you have to do more so you can get there, like I say, with a bit of time to control it. I think as he goes to those levels, what's going to happen is he will be targeted because if you can stop them guys and his touch is bad, you're going to turn the ball back on. You're going to get the ball back.
You said something before about your coach said to you, the better the player, the longer the leash. In terms of Haaland, the leash is long because I think you can put up with what you're saying because he gets that many goals. His goals are like, he's not just a great goal scorer, it's like off the scale, the numbers. So I think, is that something that you go back to where you say, you put up with that as a coach in terms of what Roy's saying? I think we agree with that. But the goals and the leash is that long.
Yeah, I suppose that's almost kind of what you're saying, is that this part of his game is League Two. Don't quote me on that. But then the goal scoring and everything else is top of the Champions League, best in the world.
Yeah.
So he should have a longer leash. Now, if that part starts to come back down, then that's...
If you're a decent player, surely he'll want to improve. I remember 90 United, and my game was box to box. I remember Brian Robson pulling me and saying, listen, you need to try and come and get deep. And I was like, no, that's not my game. But as I got a bit older, I went, that is part... You have to learn other aspects of the game. It'd be like a wide receiver
who catches a bunch of touchdowns, scores a lot of long balls, but he won't block in the running game. You're like, all right. That's okay, as long as he keeps scoring those touchdowns. Now, if he starts dropping some balls, then you're like, okay, I'm going to put somebody in that can do both.
Of course. I think when we see him, he'll have to learn. You naturally have to learn it again.
To be fair, I was going to use a different example than you, Roy, because I think that
when Coley came to United or when Rude came to United, their general link-up play wasn't of the standard probably that you would expect.
Yeah.
But the work that went on the training ground into them just actually having balls played into them after training, receiving it on yep. the, you know, receiving yeah. it,
but Pep would be doing that
off.
With him.
You know, yeah. I'm sure they're doing and that with him a lot. And that should get a lot better, I think, in the next
will
few
do.
Years.
Absolutely. Of
you just get cuter as a striker as well. You yeah. know, like when the ball's coming in, you make the move, yeah. you go, then he comes... And then it comes to you go down, bam.
I think the problem for him is that he's played a lot of his career, I feel, at Dortmund, probably running that way.
Yeah.
And that's where I think his great strength is. Whereas I think he's come to City and he's never running that way. He's actually always got his back to goal, hasn't he? He's always, if you like, in those spaces where deep defence, players in front of him, he's got to have tight touches. He's been asked to play a completely different way.
You know the thing is,
he's still getting learning about Dickie.
Absolutely. Yeah. Go back to NFL.
Never stop learning.
Why do you like NFL? Because, to be honest with you, the I think you're the one amongst us here you know, that have travelled to NFL games. You've gone to America, to the US to NFL
yeah,
games.
It's strange enough, for I'm obviously a very impatient person, but for some reason, when I'm watching American football...
I don't get that. I don't get that.
You find out later. No, yeah. when I was a kid growing up in Ireland, I'd watch any sport, so when the NFL was on, I was obviously glued to it. You know, we'd one or two stations, not as many stations, so I got into it as a young kid. Always loved the game, got back to it in the 80s, watching the game. And the fact it takes so long... I grew up watching it, so I'm dead relaxed when it takes 3.5-4 hours for a game.
My wife and I have conversations all the time. Her obviously being a professional football player and myself in the NFL. We talk about the overlaps and the different types of athleticism required, and obviously, and so we were recently talking about Haaland, and we were saying, like, could NFL players with, let's call it 5 years of training, come over and make a roster. I'm not saying play on the top teams, but make a roster, and vice versa. If you give a guy like Haaland 5 years to train in the weight room and learn, could he come and do something in the NFL? And it was a fascinating debate that we got into.
But a rugby player's just signed for the Chiefs, hasn't
he? Yeah,
really?
The Wales rugby player. Yeah.
That'd be a good Netflix documentary.
Will he make it, or will he end up just sort of like, it's a big news over here.
It's really big news, and strong, and fast.
He looks amazing.
They're doing a very big reveal on it, which is funny. I saw like the meme yesterday that was like, they're doing a reveal for a guy that's going to be fighting for a roster spot. But it's... we just changed the kickoff rules in the NFL. So I think that's part of it, is that he has experience in this, you know, kind of rugby style running system where the kickoffs might play. I don't think it's a slam dunk, like, yes, he's absolutely going to make it, at least from what I know. I know a little bit about it. But he does have a chance.
Will they be gunning for him? The guy from Wales is coming over to America and they're going to say...
Truthfully, I don't think, like, the NFL is such a cutthroat business and such a hard, like I don't think anybody would even give a second thought to it. It's just, because there's only 53 spots, and you start the roster with 90. So that means you're cutting all those guys to get down to 50. So you don't care who you're getting.
Every year?
Every year, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Every year, every team's roster starts with 90 at the beginning of training camp, and then by the opening day, you have to get to 53.
So 37 people get bombed every year.
Yeah.
So where did they go?
Home.
We've been going out
skiing.
Where did they go?
So all those teams are cutting that many players. So
yeah, so that's the big...
Where do they end up? They've got to try and go somewhere.
So you don't get paid either.
Majority
just
of them
finished.
Go home. You get paid for a couple weeks of training camp. Yeah, but you go home. Most guys like podcast. that's the dream. Like, so a lot of people will say like, I played in the NFL for a cup of coffee because like they came in for their 3-week, 4-week training camp, got cut, and they never actually played in a real NFL game or something.
Wow.
But that's another big difference between Premier League and NFL, is that at any point throughout our season, you can get cut. Like, week 7 of the season, you could get cut and be done. Or you could also get contract ripped up. Yeah, gone. Jeez. And you could also get picked back up the next week, like, same team or a different team. Like, over here, if you're on a team, you're pretty much on a team unless you get to the transfer window.
You've got to have such a strong mentality, don't you?
Just asking you a question. So Harry Kane is a very fond... He's massively into NFL. I think he's huge into NFL. And he also, I think, half fancies himself as a kicker.
Of course.
So I'm going to now give you a question. Harry Kane practices for 3 or 4 years. Yeah. Answer this question. Could he get to the level of an NFL kicker?
I think with true, proper, dedicated training, I think he could. Because I think that... His skill set, obviously having kicked balls for his entire life, then you put him with a proper kicking trainer. I don't want to diminish the job of a kicker. I think it's an extremely difficult job. But somebody that does it at the highest level like Harry has with proper training, I do.
You'd be good at it because you're good at kicking the ball over the bar, wouldn't you?
I did a field goal competition with Sergio Aguero in America when Man City was doing there. And he was phenomenal. I mean, he was making 65-yard field goals. The only difference that he would have had to work on was he took a long run-up, whereas you get from the time the ball is snapped to the time you kick the ball is 1.2 seconds.
Jesus.
So you've got to take a two-step run-up and kick it, and that was the only difference. But, I mean, he was pounding the ball through the uprights.
You see someone like Harry being good, because, like, the ball's still as well.
Yeah.
The ball's still, you can just,
I think,
like,
he
really
actually
focus.
Is going to try it. Like, it sounds like he actually...
Yeah, I think so. I'm surprised at your answer. I thought you'd have said, no, these guys have been doing it since they were 12, and he's
but
just
this is kicking, though, Gary. This is... You
know, I know, I get that, but still... they're kicking a ball.
Like, Justin Tucker is the best kicker in NFL history. He, like, I'm not saying that Harry can be that. I mean, that guy is unbelievable. But do I think that Harry could possibly, with, again, you have to remember, 3 to 4 years of intensive everyday training.
Yeah. Wow.
Do I think that he could make an NFL roster, one of 32? I think probably, just because of he's had to do it his whole life. And maybe a keeper would probably be a better option because they're having to, you know, goal kicks and everything.
Are you good at football? Like, can you play a bit with your wife playing?
I can be her training partner. Like, I can do the passing drills. I can knock a ball down.
Can you go and go also?
So this is a point of contention.
Do you join in? You don't join in with Burnley, do you, in the session?
So I was supposed to last week, but they didn't have boots my size.
They definitely do boots in a size 14.
I know. So next time I come over, I'm bringing my own.
Jill has some.
Mr. Bailey, I've got to ask you about it. You said about Vincent Kompany being a, you know, Mr. Cool and calm. Yeah. Is that the opposite of his number two?
Bellas gave me, I said, Bellas, I'm going on stick to football, give me something. He's like, which one do you want? He was ready to go at everybody. But no, he's great. He actually had to take control in the second half against Chelsea. Yeah. He did a good job for us. So yeah, no, he's a feisty. Yeah.
They have to be different though, don't they? Like, your number one and number two.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
Because all year I interviewed, believe it or not, Craig. Right at the start of the season, and they were adamant they're never going to change the style of play, irrespective of what happens. Every other club that's been through a bad run, like Burnley have been, has adapted at some point in the season. Sometimes as an owner, I found myself in the position where you have to think, well, if we keep doing the same things and continue to do the same things and we keep on struggling, surely there's a slight...
That's a stupid thing for him to say.
Yeah, but I think... Absolutely. So, but you've seen that. I can see you by your face. Yeah. That's something that
they have adapted, haven't they?
No, so we...
We a bit more direct.
They have, but not for, took a long time. It's like seven months in, eight months in.
Yeah. We
definitely, did change.
We definitely held that mentality for quite a while, and then we learned that it wasn't going to be successful, so we did have to switch it. I think that's a... Vince is obviously a first-time manager as well, so he's going through the Premier League the first time, and the way that we played in the Championship last season was so successful and dominant, obviously. Yeah. So you think you add players to that, you tweak it a little bit, but then you go up and you try it in this league. Yeah. Again, like we talked about earlier, in this league, you're going against 1-2 billion pound rosters. Sometimes you just literally don't have the ability to do that. So we did switch it at some point. And obviously we're 4 unbeaten in the last 4 matches, so something has worked. But yeah,
But you can't sit there when you're talking about football management or any team and go, this is where we're not going to change for anybody.
I'm just saying what
bizarre.
He said.
Oh, I know that, and a lot of people say it. I think it's bizarre when I hear coaches or managers say that, we're not changing for anybody. Of course you've got to adapt.
Yeah.
You can go against bigger and better teams. Well, you're just going to keep playing out from the back, and it's just not Burnley. We see loads of teams doing it.
You have
because they've all been fooled by a Man City and a Barcelona.
Yeah.
And they're getting caught. Loads of teams have done over the last 4 or 5
years.
But
it is a City mindset, isn't it, that he's come from so many years, and he's probably thinking, you've got to make the mistakes to get better, but you don't have the players, do you?
Is the plan, because obviously Burnley went down with Sean Dyche, but then they came straight back up again because they had continuity and stability. Right. Is that the thinking, that whatever happens at the end of the season, we're just going to continue to do what we believe in?
Well, I mean, it's a conversations that we're having, obviously, there's so many different things, and there's also, similar to what we're talking about here, the difference in Premier League football versus Championship football, and some of the styles that you can play in one that you might not be able to play in the other, then the players required to do each of those different styles. So it's a little bit of always trying to find that balancing act, especially right now with where we are, in, okay, if you go back down, do you play this style with these types of players, and then if you go back up, do you change that again? Like, it's constantly a learning cycle, and it's fascinating. And I didn't realize coming over the quite different styles from the Premier League to the Championship and what might work in one and not work in the other.
You're involved in a relegation battle with two teams who've lost points, and another team in Everton who might lose more. I mean, how does that affect you in terms of this? People are talking about this could actually go to the last week of the season or even beyond the season. I mean, how are you dealing with that?
Yeah, it's very interesting because obviously you sit here and you say, I want it to be as fair and I want everything to go as fair as possible, which financial fair play is a fairness issue. And you don't want to have to try and stay up because somebody else got deducted points, but that's the reality of where we are. So you're just sitting there hoping to get results on our side, control what we can control, and then see where everything else falls.
Which American football player that you look at, you think would be someone that could play football?
Yeah, it's very interesting to have this discussion. This is part of the discussion my wife and I had, because I always look right at speed. Like, I'm like, okay, let's see. Because I think the technical side, I 100% agree with my wife on this, that you guys grow up with the ball at your feet. Like, you, the ability to control the ball, handle the ball, I don't think any of us could get that in 5-6 years. That's a lifetime of a ball at your feet. So then I go to, okay, what could they do? Like a wide receiver with speed running up down the side and being able to cross one in, I think they can make, or a defensive back, man-to-man defense in the NFL, I think playing like a left or right back and being able to just man up a winger.
They could play right back.
Maybe. Don't disrespect right back, JJ.
It's the easiest position.
No, we're defenders, we've got to defend defenders, you know what I mean? It's an art form.
Yes.
But like that where you don't have to be on the ball as much, where you're literally just shadowing somebody, like, I think that might be...
Where
can we hide them, you know? Like, I don't know. But I always thought, so this is where, this back to the wife thing. This is back, I was confident in this, and I said this very confidently. I was like, given a few years to train, I would be a great keeper. And I was like, I think I could legitimately be a professional keeper.
Wow.
And I was
There's
dead
been a
serious.
Lot of American keepers, hasn't he?
Yeah.
In the Premier
And so,
League.
Not a bad one.
My wife obviously is like, she was ribbing me about it. She's like, no, stop saying that. Don't say that to the public. I was like, no. So during COVID, obviously everything's shut down. She has nobody to train with, like, and I want to help her train. So in our backyard in Wisconsin, we have a bunch of land and we built literally a soccer field. And I was like, all right, here it goes. Like, I'm gonna play keeper, you go out and you shoot on me. She dribbled across top of the box and fired a shot in upper 90, zinged past my head at 74 miles an hour. And I said, babe, okay, new rule, we have a new rule. You don't kick it from anywhere inside 20 yards. So I have the most newfound respect for keepers that I've ever had, and I no longer think I could. Like, I watch Arrow, our keeper, who's played these last three games, he's come in, and he's played at the most, he's played at an incredible level. He took a shot from point-blank breakaway that was probably 4 yards away. It was one-on-one, him and the guy, and he just took it dead to the chest, no problem. And it was one of the most impressive things I've
I think
seen.
He was pretty unlucky, you know, when he came up. I thought they would have kind of stuck with him at least at the start, just to ease maybe.
It's tough for a young goalkeeper.
Yeah, very tough for him. Yeah. I thought with James, very tough for him.
He's going to be a very, very good keeper. Absolutely. He's going to be a very, very good keeper.
But for a young keeper in the Premier League, for a team that's going to be fighting relegation.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult.
Yeah. The post-athlete career, taught, are you finding it easier? Are you struggling with it, or are you up and down?
I'm really enjoying it. I think I also partially planned for it mentally in my head because I've heard so many former teammates and I've heard so many former athletes talk about how difficult it is and some of the struggles they went through. So I've tried very hard to set myself up for success in surrounding myself with the right people and also coming to terms with the fact that it was coming to an end when it was. And I think being able to walk away on your own terms is makes it easier. Yeah. You know, I consciously did that. I could have certainly played a few more years if I wanted to, but I always knew that when my time, when I felt like it was coming towards the end, I didn't want anybody else to tell me I had to go. I wanted to be the one to decide.
Do you think having your son helped? Because I seen that his first game was your last, and I thought that's so, it was like just such a beautiful moment that you can transition into being a dad.
It was really a big part for me of why I retired also. Like, I believe that it's so incredibly, I think being a father is such a massive, you know, great thing in this world, and I want to be the best father I can possibly be. And I know myself. I know how much time and energy I commit to playing football, and I didn't want to have to make decisions every day on, okay, am I going to watch a little extra film, or am I going to go play at the play set with my son? And I wanted to make sure that I could make that decision, but... Yeah. I had my son in the middle of the season last year, and I played 10 games after he was born, and I had 10 sacks in 10 games.
Wow. Really?
So I would say, like, it was really, really cool. And then the game after he was born, I had 2 sacks, and it was really special. But it's the best thing that's ever happened. He was at Turf Moor for the first time a couple weeks ago. Wow.
You should have carried on
playing. You should have called him Saka.
You should have carried on playing. $1 million a sack. Okay,
exactly. Or keep up the babies.
That's a different sack.
Just started early.
Jesus.
It's a different side.
Jill, you lower the tone of it every week.
It's League of the Wall.
We're all walking on tiptoes.
Honest to God.
Did any of you guys have kids when you were playing?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Towards the end, yeah.
Because that's something I'm interested in to hear how you handled that. Because like the time away is tough.
It's tough. Yeah. It's tough that one because like you're just like so. Everything's about trying to win and trying to be the best and trying to train hard and do the stuff. Your family are the ones, the wives, especially the wives, what the wives have to, especially if you're one of those players that move all over the place, they have to change schools. And you're just going. You move to a house, you go training, the wife's got to sort everything out, you're just focusing on that.
Especially if you have more than one wife, isn't it?
You know, it's so, no, it's tough, it's very hard. You know, even to when they're younger.
Be careful, you're getting into Jamie territory, rather.
Even when you're younger and you're boys, you want to go, even when you want to watch them when they're playing football and you're playing at the time.
Turn to Jeremy Kyle.
And your kids are playing. When kids are playing.
I take it you travel a lot more. Do you think, I get the impression you're away a lot more.
Yeah.
Footballers, at least you're home. You are home at 1:30, 2:00 most days.
Were your kids old enough to know what was going on? Not like, really. They'd be able
Not
to watch
really.
Because
really.
I think
I
that would be the coolest thing.
I do love the fact that my son, not so much see me play, but can remember sort of going to games and going to, you know, cup final at the end. He was actually on the pitch at the end. I think it was in 2012, I think, towards the end of my career. It is something nice, I think, to look back. But I always think now as a player, to have almost, my advice to my kids basically is have kids not as late as possible, but almost get to your 30s, especially my son's a professional footballer now. But there is something that I think you can really focus on your game, no distractions. But I think it is something I do like, the fact that he's seen me. Yeah. You know, we can remember some games.
And it does, there is like a sense of pride. I mean, my son had no idea what was going on. But I did want to take the field and make him proud. Mm. Like, I wanted him to know that after he was born, like, his dad had a new meaning, a new why, and that when he goes back and watches those clips, he can watch and be like, that's my dad.
Yes.
And you've got that picture as well forever.
Yeah. Yeah, but at Burnley, if they're losing every week, that won't be good for him, will it?
Yes, to learn adversity.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yes, to learn adversity.
Head from there, yeah. Oh, his...
Well, what a beautiful place to finish.
Burnley.
You're very impressive, Mike.
Amazing.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. Like I said, I truly appreciate you guys having me on the show because I appreciate watching it. It really is fun, and I think it's very, very rare to find the combination. I told you this about the CBS show as well. Like, I think it's very rare to find the combination of level of talent, experience, and knowledge that you guys all possess, but also the humbleness and the respect for each other and the willingness to kind of, you know, break each other's chops every now and then, too. I think that's a rare combination.
You're too nice.
It's fun. You've never lost any of it.
That's why we've got Jill. That's why we've got Jill. Just bring us in place. Just
Burnley, stay up. Are you going to go have a proper celebration? Yeah, you go on the pitch.
I'll be here. I'll be here. Drinking, I mean, there's a chance that Nottingham game at the last game of the season could be wrong. Last year for the championship. So I came on as owner about a year ago, and we won the championship like 2 months after I came on. And Alan, our majority owner, looks at me and he goes, "You carry the trophy on the pitch."
Wow.
And I was like, Alan, these people are going to boo me out of the stadium. I'm the student that showed up to the project and got an A without doing anything. But it was the coolest day. I mean, we did the bus parade, we did everything. So like knowing that day, and I think always having that day in the back of my mind, that's the only thing I want to get back for these people is how that feels. Yeah.
Do you know clubs in Nottingham to tell them to go?
Is it to Forest,
I mean, they're our last match of the season. So if you could just tell them, just like, take it easy. Just like maybe just take a couple days off, that would be great. But
you're in there fighting, aren't you?
I thought they might get more than 4 points too. I thought they might get more than 4 points. Right. You call somebody and
he's got his Burnley shirt on. Did you do that on purpose?
Burnley, the colours,
You're so lovely.
Ian, you were at Burnley briefly, yeah?
Yeah, man. Yeah, it was a good time as well. I was there with the coach that started me off at Palace. So I went there at the end and we got promotion.
Who was the manager? Stan Turnant.
It was brilliant. It was brilliant time. Going back, it's like going full circle back to those guys, and it was the most fun I've had in a dressing room. The guys were amazing, man. It was a nice place. It was such a nice small town and everything. I'm pleased for them. It all started, obviously, we got promotion when I was there, and then they went on to get the success.
You were cashing in towards the end of your cash. Are
you still paying it?
No. Massive soft spot for. I just want them to do well. It's very tough for them, but I want them to.
They're
do
great
well.
People up there, man. Yeah. They've been incredible to me. I feel like people over here are very skeptical of Americans coming in, but I have to say they've been phenomenal to me and my family, so I'm very grateful.
Are you surprised? When you came in, has it took over you emotionally more than what you thought, or is it just have they won you over quicker than what you?
Yes, like it's I can't explain how deeply passionate I am about it, and I knew I was going to be, but I did not realize to this level like how much I would care, how much I would love interacting with the people. I mean, even when I'm not here and I'm in Arizona, waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning for a match, and like it is all out. I mean, my son, he's only 18 months old, but he will yell at the TV because his dad threw a coffee mug across the living room, you know?
Yeah. Amazing. Cheers,
mate.
Thank you. That was nice, eh?
Really lovely chat, man.
It's nice to collect things.
Jill, you were just... Jill, you were so fine over him, Jill. I could feel it.
That finger turned me straight and turned you gay.
It turned me gay. I know.
You were like this,
Jill. Jill was like, oh, do you know
Jesus, be professional.
I know, but he's about?
He's not only gorgeous, he's impressive.
He's impressive.
The Premier League needs more of him. 8,000 calories a day.
That's a lot. I remember, like, speaking to James Askell, who's a rugby
player.
You're
amazing.
Player.
Right, he 4, said 000, that, right?
He needed 4,000.
Right, he needed 8,000. He's 6'20", right? Of course he's got... But you're like, whoa, 8,000.
Yeah, because
he's going to be 8,000. So just treat him like a human.
We've never heard that
treat
before.
Treat him like a human.
I've never heard that before.
What if he said 200 calories?
I would have said, well, that doesn't seem like much.
Exactly. It's going to be fucking 8,000, isn't it? He's 6'9". He trains 9 times a day. It's going to be a lot. And when he said it, you and Jim were like, oh, is it there?
It's impressive.
What did you have for your breakfast? Rice Krispies. What? It's amazing. Jesus. Christ. Have you got a kid? I've got a little boy.
He's jealous.
He's jealous.
We loved him.
Yeah. 20 sacks a season. That's not enough. I'm telling you. The fridge used to do better than that.
Listen to me. You're talking Chicago about... He's gone Bears. Now. He's gone.
I hope he's gone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.